Narayanam namaskrityam. Naram chaiva narottamam. Devim sarasvatim vyasam. Tato jayam udiraye. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.16. Udavas, remembrances of Lord Krishna for Vidura. Mam kledayati etad ajasa janma. Mam kledayati etad ajasya janma. Vidambanam yad vasudeva gehe. Vidambanam yad vasudeva gehe. Vraje cha vasori bayad eva swayam. Vraje cha vasori bayad eva swayam. Vraje cha vasori bayad eva swayam. Purad vi vyabhastita yad ananta virya. Kledayati etad ajasya janma. Vidambanam yad vasudeva gehe. Vraje chad vasori bayad eva swayam. Vatsid yat ananta virya. Mam kedayati eta ajasya janma. Vidambalam yat vasudeva gehe.
Mam kledayati etad ajasya janma.
Vidambanam yad vasudeva gehe.
Vraje cha vasori bayad eva svayam.
Purad vyavatsid yad ananta viryam.
Mam kedayati etad ajasya janma. Vidambanam yad vasudeva gehe.
Parichari vaso vi bayati vasvayam. Purval via vatsidhyanantaviryam.
Mam, to me,
Kediyati
gives distress.
Etat,
this,
ajasya,
of the unborn,
janma,
birth,
vidambanam,
bewildering,
yat,
that,
Vasudeva Gehe,
in the home of Vasudeva,
Vraje,
in Vrindavan,
Cha,
also,
Vasaha,
inhabitation,
Ari,
enemy,
Bayat,
because of fear,
Iba,
as if,
Swayam,
himself,
Krishna,
Purat,
from
Mathurapuri,
Vyavatsit,
fled,
Yat,
one who is
Anantaviryaha,
unlimitedly powerful.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada.
Uddhava says,
when I think of Lord Krishna,
how he was born
in the prison house of
Vasudeva,
although he is unborn,
how he went
away from his father's
protection to
Braja
and lived there
incognito
out of
fear of the enemy,
and how,
although
unlimitedly powerful,
he fled from
Mathura in
fear.
All these
bewildering incidents
give me distress.
Baba's purport.
Because Lord
Sri Krishna is the
original person
from whom everything
and everyone has
emanated,
Aham Sarvasya
Prabhavo,
Bhagavad Gita 10.8,
Janmariyasya
Yataha,
Vedanta Sutra
112,
nothing can be
equal to or greater
than him.
The Lord is
supremely perfect,
and whenever he
enacts his
transcendental
pastimes
as a son,
a rival,
or an object
of enmity,
he plays the
part so perfectly
that even
pure devotees like
Uddhava are bewildered.
For example,
Uddhava knew perfectly
well that Lord Sri
Krishna is eternally
existing, can
neither die nor
disappear for good,
yet he
lamented for Lord
Krishna.
All these
incidents are perfect
arrangements to give
perfection
to his supreme
glories.
It is for
enjoyment's
sake when
a father plays
with his little son
and the father
lies down on the
floor as if
defeated by his son.
It is just
to give the little son
pleasure and nothing
more.
Because the Lord is
all powerful, it is
possible for him to
adjust the opposites,
such as birth
and no birth,
power and defeat,
fear and fearlessness.
A devotee knows
very well
how it is possible
for the Lord to adjust
opposite things.
But
he laments
for the non-devotees
who,
not knowing the supreme
glories of the Lord,
think of him
as imaginary,
simply
because there are so many
apparent discrepancies,
contradictory
statements
in the scriptures.
Factually, there is
nothing contradictory.
Everything is
possible when we
understand the Lord
as a Lord
and not as one of
us.
God.
Mam
kiriyati
ajasya janma
vidambanam
yabasadeva gehe
vraje
chavasot
vaso ri
bayari
vaswayam
pura
vyavatsid
yarananta
virya.
So,
earlier
Uddhava says that
without sufficient
pious credits,
people can't
actually appreciate Krishna
even though he's moving
amongst them
in ordinary human
society.
And
he talks about
why he actually appears,
But
he's kind of returning to the
same theme again,
with his
own personal
perspective to some
degree,
Because
there's so many apparent
discrepancies.
Well, if he's God, then
why does he take birth?
Well, if
he's God, then why does
he have to run away and
hide from
his evil uncle?
If he's God,
then why does he have to run away
from other
kings and his
father-in-law,
somebody,
Kongsa's
father-in-law,
something like that.
So
it must be,
all these things are
bewildering.
So
Prabhupada says that
the
suffering You know, the distress that Uddhava's feeling is not because of, you know, he's bewildered by these things, or he's, you know, his estimation of God is being challenged, but because he's thinking other people, these fools, can't appreciate this, right? They can't understand this. They have insufficient pious credos, insufficient determination. And so they think Krishna's an ordinary person, or something. You know, they're not quite sure. Maybe he's a person a little stronger than me. Kongsa's idea was, let me kill Krishna before he becomes adult and develops his full God powers. When he's a baby, he won't have his full God powers. And then I can kill him. Right? Yeah. So many philosophies about, you know, about what is going on. One famous book a long time ago called Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. And this Jewish priest couldn't figure out why, you know, if there is a God, then why do all these things happen to apparently good people, apparently nice people, these bad things happen, you know. And so his book was basically, his idea was that, well, you know, God is there, but there's so many things happening, he can't quite keep track of everything all the time like that. Yeah, if you get in touch with him or something like that, yeah, he can make adjustments. But at every moment, he's kind of like a little too much for God to deal with also. You know? And so you shouldn't expect that everything's going to go perfectly like that. Right? Yeah. Somebody has different understanding, you know. And Bhakti Mam Ami Bhabi Janati, Krishna says, you can only understand me if you're a devotee. Right? Our modern philosophy, science, is that we have to know things. It's all pervasive. It's all knowledge is the greatest thing. You can know everything eventually. We'll be able to know everything. Every year, we're getting better things for better living through chemistry from DuPont, like napalm and bovine growth hormone. And all these. Somebody will know everything and we'll be able to control everything. But our philosophy starts with a different point of view. Is that the fundamental nature of the soul is not to know things, but to love things, right? It's motivation. Yeah. I think his point last night too is a universal point. As soon as you make a certain determination, I'm God, I'm the enjoyer, then you start to know things in a certain way like that. I'm the servant of everybody, I'm meant to try and see how everybody is engaged in Krishna's service. Then you start developing a certain kind of knowledge about what's happening, who are we, what's possible like that. So knowledge is dependent upon your motivation, right? Don't let the scientists fool you. Right? Don't let the scientists make a hog, dog, camel, or ass out of you. Right? Is it Sanskrit svahostra? Those who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses never glorify the Supreme Lord, but they glorify those who don't take pleasure in glorifying God. They're like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. And Prabhupada says the dog is like the university student. Right? He goes to the university, sacrifices so much time, austerity, controls his mind, does so many things, right? And he gets his diploma. And he says he goes door to door to big corporations and scratches on the door with his diploma in his mouth, saying, please give me some job. And usually he's driven away with a stick saying, no job here. Like that. So he says university trains the student for this doggish mentality, you know, accepting a higher master. Like that. You know? So this kind of mentality, we can't, you know, understand all these things. It's bewildering. Yeah. But only if you love Krishna, want to serve Krishna, then he can allow you to understand all these things can be adjusted. As, you know, somebody asked Prabhupada the classical question, can God make a rock that's so big he can't lift it? Because he was all powerful, then, you know, it's a contradiction, right? So Prabhupada said yes, but then he would lift it anyway, right? Get that, you know? Or, you know, Hiranyakasipu, right? You know, he'd be just saying, well, I won't die inside or outside, daytime or nighttime, you know, and on the ground, in the air, or, you know, on the ocean, not by any of the 8,400,000 existing species of life. That's all he asked for, isn't it? Huh? Got that in the beginning. Yeah, like that. So God killed him on the porch at sunset with his fingernails in a half man, half lion form on his lap. And so it's like, satisfied all his requirements, you know. So born and unborn. Well, yeah, he's born and unborn. You know, he comes up with both these things, you know. It's all with a broader intelligence, it's all possible to see how Krishna adjusts at all. But it's not formless either. It's all full of form. It's like the reason. It's all. He is born and unborn, but it has a certain kind of way he does it, like this and that. And for a devotee, it's very, you know, marvelous. Right? But for someone less intelligent, he just can't appreciate this, and therefore he becomes frustrated, you know, and gives it up. And Uddhava is lamenting that these people can't appreciate, you know, Krishna's presence like that, you know, lamenting for these poor fools. So, any other comments? Questions? Uddhava's Smaranam. This is Lila Smaranam. So many ways to associate with Krishna. Yeah? But this is one of the very best. You know, Lila Smaranam. Smaranam means recollection, meditation of his pastimes like that. But, you know, he does it with a perspective, a philosophical perspective of who is Krishna. You know, first off, he establishes that clearly in his intelligence. One time, a nice story I've been told before. Hari Sori was with Prabhupada, and they were invited to come to some symposium, you know, seminar on Bhagavad Gita in the modern world. And so it was going on for 3 days. And the first 2 days, it was going on. And Prabhupada was invited to talk on the third day about 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something. Like that. And so they went there, and it was out in the country, some ashram, a little bit out of the city, big, you know, place with residences and meeting halls and that and so on. So Prabhupada went there, and he got there, I guess, about 12 o'clock or something. And immediately all these people stood up, you know, when he got out of the car and received him and said, "Do you want to go into the assembly hall right now, or do you want to wait until your lecture?" He said, "I'll wait." So they took him in one room which had an entrance directly into the, you know, the conference room. And Hari Sori said that Prabhupada was just kind of walking back and forth, talking to him. But he could see he wasn't really talking to him. He was just like getting himself in the particular mentality he wanted to be into, the perspective to lecture. And he was saying, "This person, he wrote this commentary about Bhagavad Gita. What does he know about Bhagavad Gita? He does this and that, you know." So he was going back and forth and becoming more and more irritated by these things they were saying. Right? It's the same thing. It's an art. It's a science to get yourself in a certain mentality, intellectually, first off, and then by different pastimes, once you're in the proper perspective, activities. You know? And Uddhava is also in terms of other beings, also. He's not just in terms of himself and Krishna, but also in terms of the living entities in the world. And different bhavas, you know, different oceans and waves in the ocean, how they come together, and, you know, and these things like that. So it's a whole, science? It's a whole art. So Hari Sori said that Prabhupada was becoming more and more irritated and more, you know, furious. And all of his reasons were there. Like he had all of his reasons pulled out, ready in his intelligence, reviewing them like that. And so he said when they opened the door, you know, from this room into the lecture area, so it was like when he opened the door and the bull ring. You know, for the bullfight, you know, it was like the guys opened the door and Swamiji, it was like, he came out they were shocked, the organizers. He just went right up, they didn't introduce him or anything, he just started right away chastising everybody in the audience and about the whole proceedings and the modern interpretations of Bhagavad Gita and how, you know, all these things, everybody is, what's the word, interpreting it, you know, in their own way. And he said it was so Hari Sori was following after Prabhupada, wondering what's going to happen now. I came out the door. He said it was so intense that people were just shocked. It took him about, you know, 2 minutes or almost 3 minutes to finally just, you know, produce shocked for for a minute or 2 minutes before they finally could just react, you know. And then some of them started standing up and, you know, Chinmay and Ander or somebody, you know, sort of standing up and arguing with Prabhupada, and other people started supporting him. You know? And he said, "You are also interpreting Bhagavad Gita." "No, I am explaining it. I am not interpreting it." You know? Then one Bengali lady was there, about 35 years old or something, and so she said, "You are simply supporting Sri Krishna Chaitanya and his cult." And Prabhupada said, "I never mentioned Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sit down and shut up." So she was like her grandfather, talking to her, you know. So it went on like that for, you know, and then everybody, you know, before, but it's kind of sadhu, sadhu, and the conference, and everybody applauding, everybody else waiting for their turn to talk, And then finally Prabhupada got all this, this stuff going, and people were taking different positions and arguing amongst themselves and everything. Then Hari Swari said after about, 5 minutes of this, 10 minutes, Prabhupada began to like just kind of slow everything down, calm it down, and straighten it out. And by the end, everybody was kind of laughing about the whole thing and peaceful again like that, So you could see he was involving them in the bhava, right? In this sentiment, they had, whether they like it or don't like it, it's interesting. One devotee, Sannyasi, said many people, they come back to the temple because it's, nobody else to argue with about these things. Nobody else cares about these things. So they come back again and again to argue with the devotees, and can defeat them this time. It takes prasadam. And after some time, they finally begin to, appreciate, right? The culture and philosophy like that. So Buddha was here, right? There's a mentality, just getting himself in the particular mindset he wants. And also involving Vidura in this, right? Yeah. So, any comments? Mahaprasad Buddha. We're fasting until noon. They were fasting until noon, right? Because we can't fast tomorrow for the appearance day of Lord Varaha. Yeah.
This is not exactly on topic, but I was wondering, there's some tradition of human sacrifice in South America, and I just wanted to ask about that. And I know it's somehow in the Vedic tradition a little bit, so I just wanted to know.
Pretty much, all these things, it's like, again, I can tell you, it's kind of a joke. You see, right now in Houston, I'm sure, there are people with masks on, with knives, cutting people and taking all their money. Right? Surgeons. Right? So somebody, they want, please, take my money, please, cut me. So, because the person, the goal is good. Everybody is participating. You have people who are, restraining the person, everything. They're all feeling good about this, So, same way, the human sacrifices or the animal sacrifices cause a great, great, splash in the force, on the white side of the force or whatever it is. It has a big effect. There's all this karma is coming together in this human body, right? And we're doing something to to use that for some effect. So you know what you're doing. As a person who's being sacrificed as a human sacrifice, he's very happy. And his karma is being burned up in this way. He's being, it has happened to him. Because nothing else, he's going to get great benefit from this. He may be promoted directly to the heavenly planets. So there's a competition to see who can be the sacrifice. And you see right now, somebody will sacrifice themselves for their country. Soldiers are asking to be in that position, to lead the charge. We all going to die, But it's how if you die a glorious death, So there's a human sacrifice, and then the animal sacrifice is a lesser thing, involving lesser things. And then the potato sacrifice is, what we can do in the Kali Yuga. Our priests here sacrifice potatoes on the altar of our God, it's a fact. And Baba says, the tree or the fruit, offer an apple to Krishna. Baba says there's great benefit for the tree when its fruits are offered to the deity like that. So every tree that does that, very happy. The bamboos were very happy seeing that their son, the flute, had become a flute of Krishna. I'd be very happy. So it goes on. It was going on all over the world. In the India, Buddha stopped it. In the East, somebody, I don't know, Abraham or somebody, was stopped there by somebody at that point in the West. Like that. And in South America, I don't know, it was the ink, I think it was more knowledge, more knowledge, historical knowledge about what the Aztecs were doing than what the Inca and different groups were doing like that. There's some speculation, this skeleton of this child must have been killed because this, was there, this kind of break in the skull or something, but it may also have died a natural death, and they put it there. Like that. But as far as I know, I can't think of myself, but it may be, there's when the Spanish came and their chroniclers started recording things, there was no real knowledge about Inca sacrifices, as ritual sacrifices. Well, I suspect there was. They were killing people, that's for sure, during the wars, and making spectacles out of them to, discourage the enemies, pretty heavy, group like that. The Aztec, apparently, there was more, it was going on like that. One thing was, it was kind of like the, what was his name? Jarasandha's Kali Bhairav sacrifice of all these kings. He captured all these kings to offer to Shiva. And I think all they had to do was just surrender to him, and then they weren't fit offerings. But as long as they maintained their independence, then they brought bona fide offerings like that. So it was by their voluntary will in some ways. So same way when the Aztec, some rival king, they would put him into an arena with four other warriors and give him like a rubber sword, like that, a wooden sword, and give them iron swords, steel swords, and then they he would fight and die, die fighting. I was told the Aztec culture was so warlike that the lowest, meanest hell you can go to, you have to fight your way into it to go there. It's like so, kshatriya. And a dog to help you across some place, great thing like that. You know anything else about Peruvian, in Peru?
Sacrifices?
Ritual human sacrifices.
Well, they used to sacrifice the enemies.
Yeah.
They
hated
enemies.
Yeah, Ayacucho. It's famous for there. But in terms of rituals. But I'm pretty sure it must have been going on because there's so much, mysticism there. In Brazil, places like that. Even now, my God, in Brazil, where they know him. Even now, in the jungle, probably, even still. Brujeria.
Shrink.
Yeah, afterwards, But it's like that. It has an effect. I know in Nepal, they're still doing sacrificing cats, killing cats and stuff. It's okay. Why are you asking?
I'm sorry.
Why was that? Well, kind of wondering why you're asking these questions. If you're planning something for the benefit of mankind. Next purport is kind of related. Do no ticheta smarato mamaitad yad ahapadav abhivandya pitro. Lord Krishna begged pardon from his parents. For their, Krishna and Balaram's, inability to serve their feet, Vasudeva and Devaki, due to being away from home because of great fear of Kamsa, he said, "O my mother, O father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives pain to my heart." Prabhupada's purport, it appears that Lord Krishna and Baladeva were both very greatly afraid of Kamsa, and therefore they had to hide themselves. But if Lord Krishna and Baladeva are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how is it possible that they were afraid of Kamsa? Is there any contradiction in such statements? Vasudeva, due to his great appreciation for Krishna, wanted to give him protection. He never thought that Krishna was the Supreme Lord and could protect himself. He thought of Krishna as his son. Because Vasudeva was a great devotee of the Lord, he did not like to think that Krishna might be killed like his other children. Morally, Vasudeva was bound to deliver Krishna to the hands of Kankra because he had promised to turn over all his children. But out of his great love for Krishna, he broke his promise, and the Lord was very pleased with Vasudeva for his transcendental mentality. He did not want to disturb the intense affection of Vasudeva, and thus he agreed to be carried by his father to the house of Nanda and Yashoda. And just to test the intense love of Vasudeva, Lord Krishna fell down in the waters of the Jamuna while his father was crossing the river. Vasudeva became mad after his child as he tried to recover him in the midst of the rising river. Right? It's hard to imagine the intensity of attachment, of these people, these things like that. These are all glorified pastimes of the Lord, and there is no contradiction in such manifestations. Sri Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He was never afraid of Kamsa. But to please his father, he agreed to be so. And the most brilliant part of his supreme character was that he begged pardon from his parents for being unable to serve their feet while absent from home because of fear of Kamsa. A Lord whose lotus feet are worshipped by demigods like Brahma and Shiva wanted to worship the feet of Vasudeva. Such instruction by the Lord to the world is quite appropriate. Even if one is a supreme Lord, one must serve his parents. A son is indebted to his parents in so many ways, and it is the duty of the son to serve his parents. However great the son may be, indirectly Krishna wanted to teach the atheists who do not accept the supreme fatherhood of God, and they may learn from this his action how much the supreme father has to be respected. Uddhava was struck with wonder, Uddhava was simply struck with wonder by such glorious behavior of the Lord, and he was very sorry. Now, why is he lamenting? And last time he's lamenting because, because some people lacking pious credit, they can't understand these pastimes, so he's lamenting. But here he says he was very sorry because that he was unable to go with Krishna. Several reasons. This is common. Several reasons why things are happening. Several things are happening at the same time. Sentiments are combining together. This is the spiritual world. It's a rasa, is a common, as an aggregate. Prema is the aggregate of all the different rasas. Not just one, but they're kind of combined together in certain ways that make it more and more intense, more and more wonderful. So he's feeling two kinds of lamentation. For the people who can't appreciate Krishna's pastimes and how wonderful they are, and also that he himself, how wonderful they are, and he can't go with Krishna, that he has to stay here. Right? But he's feeling a higher kind of pleasure because he's following Krishna's order. It is to take care of the devotees, and that makes Krishna happy. Really, not just like a job, but Krishna really is feeling, what's going to happen to all the devotees when I leave? So Uddhava, you're the person who can take care of them. So please, you stay and take care of them. And he's feeling, all right, this is really pleasing Krishna. And that's how to associate with Krishna. Yeah? So his activity of service. You know, like that. Say the question? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Understanding
that he has about Krishna, and people with less pious credits.
Am I seeing this right?
Maybe I'm asking. No, there's a point. What's the basis of his ecstasies and his relationship to Krishna? It's not jnana. It's not exactly knowledge of Krishna's position and function. This is the point of bhava, or ecstasy. Bhava is prema in the immature stage. Vaidhi bhakti, vaganuga bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. So bhava, come to the level of bhava, it's there. But it's not mature, it's not intense. And Krishna can't relish it yet. Like that, Like a mango before it's ripe, it's a mango. It's not relishable yet. So bhava is the immature stage. So there are five aspects to this bhava. And bhava is the real relationship, the real situation of the living entity, the nature of reality. This logical perspective and relationship with things we explained last night. This is buddhi, right? Sometimes. And this is buddhi, the material element, is right away is a rebellion against God. I can control things. I can know God. So right away, it's ridiculous in the first place. But it's, see this. In German, the words in German are even more potent. When guy's explaining it, to know in German means this thing of dominating and controlling. It's more clear. So it isn't. He's like not serving God or serving Krishna or having a relationship out of the fact that I know him and therefore I will act like this and that. See? But the five aspects of bhava, the stimulus is anubhava. Vibhava. And that can be in two categories. One is Krishna directly, and that falls into two different categories also, udipana and what do you call something else. So, well, that's later on, ecstasy. But it can be Krishna's personal features. like you've seen the deities or Krishna's smile, you know, how he's dressed, how he acts, his character, what he does.
Huh?
Well, again, so the other category is things that are not directly Krishna, but are just real close and then remind us of Krishna. For example, you're coming down the road, I haven't been to the temple here for a long time, and I see the temple like that and how it's being constructed, and I go, wow, it's just like, Haribol! I want to express this. I want to act in a certain way. So that's an Anubhava. You know, voluntary expression. But if I just like, even tears are coming to my eyes and seeing this, that's sattvika bhava. It's involuntary. But they're both reactions, you know, to the vibhava, to the stimulus. So the stimulus is Krishna's form, his character, his qualities, you know, his pastimes with, or his devotees or his temple, or, you know, which right away just whoosh, slides us right to Krishna. So it can't exist without Krishna's mercy, without Krishna's activity. You can't just understand, well, I'll investigate how what's going on, I'll understand the philosophy, and I'll serve Krishna. Maybe to some degree, but really, really it has to exist because Krishna is the aggressor, because Krishna is the cause of everything. Like that. And then a relationship, maybe, okay, I'm as good as Krishna. You know, it's fraternal rasa or things like that. But it only exists because Krishna is there as like a son, you know, to have that relationship with. Again, Prabhupada says the gopis were so anguished by Krishna's teasing behavior, but when he went away, they, you know, one time Radharani, they say ranged like it's a Krishna kun, or the Krishna kun, where is it? Prem Sarovar. It's on the way to, Varsana, Nandagam, big kunda there. Very beautiful. Madhukunda is called sometimes, because I think it was the first place where Radha and Krishna met.
Yeah.
A little boy and girl. Somebody they have some attraction, and like, you know, all of Radharani's friends, like Lalita and Vishaka, they're like, you know, 12 years old or something, and Radharani's 11 years old or something. And well, okay, we should have a meeting, just like adults. And so they dress her all like an adult with a sari and everything. And then the Krishna's friends are getting him all dressed up, and then they arrange a meeting, like a children's tea party. And the adults are going to meet and stuff, and so Krishna's there first, and they bring Radharani in next, and she's sitting next to him, and they're kind of maybe doing some kind of performance of like music or something, and they're sitting next to her, so they're walking and watching, and Radharani is totally, you see, English, freaked out, you know, what's going to happen next? Why did they ever let that stupid Lalita, you know, talk me into doing this? You know, is he going to try and grab my hand next? Oh my God, you know, so she's totally like, you know, terrorized. And then simultaneously when Bumblebee is coming around trying to like, just so attracted by the fragrance of her face and her breath, and she's like this kind of like, you know, without half unconsciously just kind of chasing it away. And Krishna's in the same state of consciousness, you know. So then next, Madhu Mangal comes along and sees this bumblebee bothering Radharani, so he shoos it away with his cloth. And he says, oh, I've chased Madhu away, don't worry. So she thinks that he means that he saw she was disturbed by the situation, so he sent Krishna away. So she didn't want that, so now she starts crying because Krishna's not there. He's sitting right next to him. And then Krishna sees her crying, and so he starts crying also. So their tears make the sarovar, the kunda, like that.
Prem sarovar.
Yeah. Huh? Maybe Prem sarovar is in Nandagaon, right? It's in Nandagaon, yeah. This is that little, maybe like about, I don't know, 2 kilometers before that. It's back off the road.
Yeah.
It was very nice, very famous. Yeah. Prem sarovar. Hey, Prince. Yeah? Okay. It's off the road, right? There's temples on both sides. Okay, yeah. What's the one in Nandagaon? Pavan. Yeah. Yeah.
Pavan, sir.
Yeah, there. I think there's one there. Yeah. Okay? Yeah, so there's always it's this impetus maintains the situation like that. And Uddhava's entering into this. You know, and actually it says that later on he'll have to come back to the mundane platform to talk to Vidura. You know, about that. Yeah. Yeah. So it's okay. Yeah. So the logic and jnana, these things are good in the beginning to get us properly situated. It would have even uses that in the beginning, right? But after you come to this point of actually having a relationship with Krishna, and you know, who's active, you no longer need this logic and stuff. You can use it, but it's just like, you know, yeah.
So their place is basically to help with culture, developing spiritual culture within itself, and then once you've got the idea,
yeah,
and become more natural.
Yeah, and it's a matter of taste. Even Socrates one time had a very logical lecture, and somebody asked him, what do you think about this? He said, well, it's very logical, there's all historical references, but it's not aesthetically pleasing. So I not beautiful, so I reject it. Yeah? Yeah. So ultimately it comes to that point. It's not a matter that the logic is secondary. It's kind of like the kind of what we call logic. You know, the analysis and these kind of things. Yeah? You can appreciate a higher thing. Prabhupada was passing away. You know, it's pretty obvious he's departing. But all the devotees are saying, no, Prabhupada, you're going to go, you know, you're going to surpass this, you're going to live for 100 years more. And Prabhupada was saying, well, maybe so. But it was a whole feeling, sentiment, idea, this intensity, this desire. So when Sannyasi was saying he came there, and he also was kind of imitating everybody else, said this, but he wasn't in the mood. And Prabhupada, you're going to get beyond this, and you're not going to die. And Prabhupada said, no. It was like, because he wasn't able to, wasn't in the emotional, you know, existence, you know, transcendental, ecstatic, emotional existence of the gopis. And that's what we're recommending. Like people say, oh, this is the sentiment, the logic, jnana yoga. This is the real thing. Yeah. Uddhava was the greatest logician. And he was a disciple of Brihaspati, right? So all these systems. Somebody was telling me that in the Granit, in the mathematical sections in the Vedas, there's systems for calculating, you know, for doing arithmetic, multiplication, division, addition, subtraction. You know, 275,334 times 18,436. What's the answer? Yeah. So there are like six different systems for doing this. And the one we learn in elementary school, that's one system, you know, for doing multiplications like that. You know, divisions. You make a little thing, you draw like this, you go like this, you keep your things below. Right? It's one system. Right? There's like six more. I think one of them requires that you have to keep three registers going at the same time. You got to be able to keep like, you know, what's in this pile, what's in this pile, what's in this pile. This is two, this is five, this is six, you know, two digit maybe, you know. And if you can do that, then you can go these complicated numbers and get the answer like that. Because you're keeping like, you know, it's an algorithm, it's a series of things like that. You know, like that. So Uddhava knew all these things. The one girl, I thought she was traveling and she was good at this, and she was beating these hand calculators. Because what happened with the hand calculators, many times they would enter the number wrong and have to enter it again, right? Enter it properly, yeah, it was faster, but they kept making these mistakes and have to put it in again. So she, you know, five out of seven times she was faster than they could do it with an electric calculator. Rajahansa one time was talking to his father. He was a PhD in chemistry, Rajahansa, BI, his uncle. And he was working for the railroad for, you know, some executive guy for, you know, 20 years. So he had this list of like, you know, three-digit numbers, like about 40 numbers like that. So he goes like this, puts a total down. You know, so Raju Hansa said, well, uncle, shouldn't we check it? And I said, Raju, you know, in 25 years, I haven't been wrong one time. Oh, okay. Yeah. So Uddhava was a master of all these things. I mean, he learned from Brihaspati all these logical systems, Nyaya, you know, by which, you know, it's like idiots, children nowadays compared to what he was doing. And still, when he actually came in contact, you know, with these sentiments of Vrindavan, just to hell with it all. You know? So maybe the jnanis are right. Maybe jnana yoga is superior to bhakti yoga. But we, how do we know? You know? You know? Have you tasted gopi bhava? You know, try to control our senses. You know? But still, we have all these examples, and they're willing to take us by the hand, like Uddhava's taking Vidura by the hand and giving him a chance to experience this, you know? Mm. Like that. You know? So somebody tells you, you know, when the devotee was arguing with in India with a big philosopher, and the guy was talking about these things, and the devotee, his name was Bhushra, he said, yeah, well, maybe, I don't know, you see, like you know them, but I do know that Sarvabhoma, Vasudeva Sarvabhoma, he was the Sabha Pandit for Maharaj Prataparuddha, the dean of the Sanskrit languages, the head of his thing. He was one of the greatest scholars who ever lived in India, ever walked the earth, and he became a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was wondering how the guy would react, and the guy was a very, very educated person, and he was it's a fact. Because even now, you go to the University of California, you can still find books on logic by Vasudeva Sarvabhoma in their collection like that. Analysis of different systems of logic and structure. You know, very, you know, it's incredible. You know, for example, if you have like a computer program, there's that one thing, I'll finish here. Topology is called rubber geometry. Now if you make it some form, geometric form, but if it's on rubber, you can stretch it, right? So in that sense, a triangle is equal to a square is equal to a circle in topology because you can stretch it. But two circles don't equal one circle, right? Because you can't, no matter how you stretch it, you can't get the boundaries to go like that. So they develop all these theorems of complicated things like that because on a circuit board is flat. And what it is basically is like a film that you put on there by photography. You take draw your circuit, okay? Then you make a positive out of it, film positive. Then optically you reduce it down and you burn the plate, and they're very fine. So all the places where it's burned, those become wires, lines like that. But regular wires can pass over each other, right, in a circuit. But these can't because it's all in the same plane like that. So if I tell somebody, okay, I've got 795 points and this and that and this and that, is it possible to arrange those things in such a way that I can connect them all? Wow. So in topology, they develop all these different theorems and combinations and to analyze these things and so that they can tell these computer guys, yes, it can be done and you have to do it like this. You know? Otherwise, it's just bewildering. You know? So in Stanford, philosophy is degraded down to this point where it means like this mathematical analysis is all it is. You know, no idea of any higher thing like that. You know? So even now, if people started looking at the Indian tradition, these Nyaya Shastras and things like that, you're going to find just incredible. And with one scholar, a Sanskritist, he's this big professor, he said it would take a Westerner entire lifetime to master one of these things. One of them, to speak of like these guys who can, you know, so many of these systems like that. You know? So this is Uddhava. You know? You know? And still, he's a devotee. So Prabhupada ki, Kadasya Bhatta ki, Varaha Avatar ki, Gaurapimanandi. So Mark, one of them. Feel like an idiot? Feel like an idiot? Yeah. It's incredible. And he goes on like that. And they have all these big things, for example, like you write a computer program. And depending on how you write it, it'll run slower or faster if it has to do certain things first. Things when you study computer science, you have to develop a hierarchy and stuff like that. It'll run so slow.